around the globe. In sold-out arenas and humble churches, from out on the streets to your screen. And now, the time and what must be done. On this edition of Farrakhan Speaks.
Greetings to you. I am Minister Louis Farrakhan, National Representative of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, that great preacher of freedom, justice, and equality to the black man and woman of America and the Western Hemisphere, and to the Aboriginal people of the earth, the eternal leader of the Nation of Islam, and a warner to the government and people of the United States of America, and a warner to the nations of the earth. In last week's broadcast, remember that Abraham Lincoln wanted to separate black people and give them a place outside of America and aid from America in helping us to go for ourselves. And Mr. Lincoln said that it was morally right that we be separated, and it was in the best self-interest of America to do so. And what he was looking for then was those strong men and women in government who would recognize and have the will to do this. As it was then, so it is now. In fact, it is more morally correct that we be separated. In fact, it is more in America's self-interest to help us to go for self. So if you have any moral sense of what is right, what is judicious, what does moral mean? Moral means it is of, or pertaining to, or concerned with the principles or the rules of right conduct, or the distinction between right or wrong, ethical or moral attitudes, expressing or conveying truths or counsel as to right conduct, founded on the fundamental principles of right conduct rather than on legalities, enactments, or custom. Here again, Lincoln, the 16th president, is linked to the moral sense of the third president, Thomas Jefferson. In his mind, it was morally correct to send the slaves out and let them go free. And it is in our self-interest, Lincoln said, to do that. Here are two presidents that were overridden by a majority opinion. Thomas Jefferson could not get the founding fathers to agree with the morality of what he was saying, and they couldn't see their self-interest and the long-range good to their children in the morality of what he was saying. And neither could the people in the time of Abraham Lincoln see the moral sense and the self-interest of separating the black from the white. Lincoln said, "Party operations at present only favor or retard colonization incidentally. They don't favor it fully, but incidentally and incrementally. Now look at this. This is why members of the Jewish community could influence the politicians of that time for separate but equal. It's a form of colonization because the blacks are in a separate area, but that area is controlled from whites outside of their area. The definition of colonize means to send a group of settlers to a place and establish control over it. Come to settle and establish political control over the indigenous people of an area. To appropriate a place or domain for one's own use. Is it an accident that everywhere you find black people in America, you find us living in an area appropriated to us by that which has the power to do so? So we have been effectively colonized without giving us anything like Thomas Jefferson or Abraham Lincoln desired for us to have. We live in an appropriated area under the control of whites through black preachers and politicians and business people that white people control. They gerrymander us as Dr. King has accused them of doing. What is gerrymandering? Gerrymandering in politics is the dividing of a state, a county, into election districts so as to give one political party a majority in many districts while concentrating the voting strength of the other into as few districts as possible. That's part of the incremental, incidental colonization of us. You redraw districts to take power from and give power to. Many colonies in Africa, the Caribbean, and in Central America were gifted their freedom, except Haiti. So when your former slave master gifts you something, you better be careful that it's not a Trojan horse. Is it something that has in it something that will overcome you and eventually keep you in a colonized state? Black people's condition in Africa, the Caribbean, and Central America is nothing more than a colony of blacks subjected to the whim or will of outside forces. So you are separate, but very, very unequal. So now your desire is to integrate into the major colonial power, not completely separate from them. Let's see how blacks have fared integrating into the countries of their former colonial master. How's it going? We have many Francophone countries, countries that have been under the rule of France, and Anglophone countries, countries that are under the rule of England. But both the Francophone and the Anglophone countries are still tied to your former colonial master. His education is what you function by. His legalities and system of law and governance and jurisprudence is what you function by. So you have a flag. You have representatives in the Commonwealth Nations and in the United Nations, but you are not able to yet see that you are yet a colony. Just as in the black community in America, when it looks like we're going to get political power, they redraw lines to take power from us and give it to others who are more affable, more friendly, and a part of their desires. So it is with you in Africa. You are subjected now to Europe by means of food production. Your food is coming to you from outside. You're not producing your own food. You are subjected now because you're in debt to the IMF and the World Bank. So you're nothing more than a legitimized colony with not even the implements that will allow you to set yourself free. So as it is in the 16th chapter of Ezekiel, you're still like a baby cast out in the open field. Nobody to cut the umbilical cord. So you are not washed and cleaned. And you are absolutely not clothed or covered. But you are polluted in the blood or life directed by a colonial or slave mentality. So it's a worldwide colonization of the darker people of our planet. That is why the message of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is so vital, so necessary for the darker people, the Aboriginal people of the world, to wake them up, to make them see that they have been neo-colonized. Some of the Gentiles would have wanted to let us go and send us off to another place somewhere, but still under their domination, so-called protection and care. But some members of the Jewish community did not want the Gentiles to win that argument of methodology of dealing with us. These members of the Jewish community wanted us to stay in the South under the slave codes and the black codes, and they wanted us to farm the land as sharecroppers. But the Jewish influence in the South politically through cotton is what kept us tied down. But also by their influence, they also guided the Gentiles as well. So to help our people to see and fulfill this prophecy, quote, "And the Gentiles will come to the brightness of thy rising." In the 60th chapter of Isaiah of the King James Version, look at what it says. "Arise, shine, for thy light is come, and the glory of the Lord is risen upon thee." It's talking about you and me, brothers and sisters. In the second verse, "For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth, and gross darkness the people. But the Lord shall arise upon thee, and his glory shall be seen upon thee. And the Gentiles will come to thy light, and kings to the brightness of thy rising. Lift up your eyes round about and see, all they gather themselves together, they come to thee. Thy sons shall come from afar, and thy daughters shall be nursed at thy side." Our talk today of salvation are beginning to stimulate Gentile support. And by Gentile, we mean non-Jewish whites. And some small Jewish support is also coming to us. While at the same time, there's very virulent, terrible Jewish opposition with some of their Gentile friends. You know, I mentioned in Indianapolis that there are some white militia that are saying that Obama's agreement with Iran justifies President Obama being assassinated. I respectfully warn you, America, that if President Obama is harmed, our people, along with many other people, will rise up in reaction more than those who rose when Dr. King was assassinated. It will cause the military forces of America to put us and others down with great force. It will stimulate division among blacks, whites, Hispanics, in all branches of law enforcement. It will turn even members of the armed forces against their government. If you harm President Obama, one whom the majority of Americans have elected to be their president, then there is no hope for the little black or brown man or Native American or poor whites to get equal justice under this present power construct. This brings us back to the words of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, that we should separate, that America should look after us in a separate state or territory for the next 20 to 25 years until we are able to produce our own needs. Now, regardless of what you may think of the politics of the situation, it was the Honorable Elijah Muhammad that advised us to take his program and put it before the Congress of the United States, because ultimately we are going to be such a troublesome species of property that the Congress itself is going to have to rule on something like this. Take the Muslim program before Congress. A man named Justin Smith Morrill, a senator from Vermont, is most widely remembered today by the Morrill Land Grant Colleges Act that established federal funding to establish many of the public colleges and universities, which later in a second land grant act included the HBCUs. Mr. Morrill was one of the founders of the Republican Party. Now, the first Morrill Act of 1862 funded educational institutions by granting federally controlled land, 30,000 acres, to the states for them to develop land-grant colleges. The mission of these institutions was to focus on the teaching of practical agriculture science, military science, engineering, and it was designed to meet the needs of the Industrial Revolution and the changing social class. The purpose of the land-grant colleges was, without excluding other scientific and classical studies, it included military tactics to teach such branches of learning as are related to agriculture, engineering, and the mechanic arts in such manner as the legislatures of the states may respectively prescribe in order to promote the liberal and practical education of the industrial classes in the several pursuits and professions in life. The Second Morrill Act of 1890 was the basis for the creation of the HBCUs. This is very important to understand why blacks were Republicans, because from Abraham Lincoln and the Emancipation Proclamation, black folk felt obligated to the Republican Party and to a man like Justin Morrill from Vermont, a New England state, who saw the plight of black people, that they needed education and we needed land. We just want us to understand where land-grant colleges came from, because when somebody can grant you land, they can take it away. And right now they're taking back some of the land because we are not using it in accord with its original purpose. Those intelligent political leaders understood that something had to be done about our presence and condition. These land-grant colleges that were thought of for black people, that says something. They already know that this is a people that are here. They know that something has to be done with and for us. And that's what makes the words of Thomas Jefferson so important. James Monroe and others setting up Liberia in Africa was an experiment. Abraham Lincoln appealing for us to be separated. These land-grant colleges were designed to prepare black people ultimately to go somewhere and do something with what they had learned. We were to be separated either in Central America or to Africa, but they were preparing us to be able to do what? To do something for self. There are 18 historically black colleges and universities that are land-grant colleges that were given land. But are any of these colleges using the land to develop agriculture and to teach the students how to farm, how to grow food, how to protect the seeds, how to create markets for what they produce? In a speech delivered by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. at the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. on March 31st, 1968, 4 days before he was assassinated, he addresses the historic deception of blacks and land ownership. So these words of Dr. King, in our humble judgment, are more important than his celebrated I Have a Dream speech, because these words represent the evolution of his thought processes that led to his assassination. Dr. King said 4 days before he was assassinated, listen to his words. In 1863, the Negro was told that he was free as a result of the Emancipation Proclamation being signed by Abraham Lincoln. But he was not given any land to make that freedom meaningful. It was something like keeping a person in prison for a number of years and suddenly discovering that the person is not guilty of the crime for which he was convicted. And you just go up to him and say, now you're free. But you don't give him any bus fare to get to town. You don't give him any money to get some clothes to put on his back or to get on his feet again in life. Every court of jurisprudence would rise up against this. And yet, this is the very thing that our nation did to the black man. It simply said, you're free. And it left him there. Penniless, illiterate, not knowing what to do. And the irony of it all is that at the same time that the nation failed to do anything for the black man, the freed slaves, though an act of Congress at that time was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which means or meant that America was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did it give the land, it built land-grant colleges to teach them how to farm. Not only that, it provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, as the years unfolded, it provided low interest rates so that they could mechanize their farms. And to this day, thousands of these very persons are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies every year not to farm. And these are so often the very people who tell Negroes that they must lift themselves up by their own bootstraps. It's all right to tell a man to lift himself by his own bootstraps, but it is a cruel jest to say to a bootless man that he ought to lift himself up by his own bootstraps. We must come to see that the roots of racism are very deep in our country, and there must be something positive and massive in order to get rid of all the effects of racism and the tragedies of racial injustice. Think of those words. Think of that man, Dr. King. Oh, would that America and black children would be fully exposed to the evolutionary growth and development of Dr. King, so that they could evolve and we could evolve with him. Dr. Martin Luther King met with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad 2 years earlier, and if we watched the progression of his language and his mind referring to the black man, and then to the question of land, he was approaching the position of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And they feared that the eloquence, brilliance, and organizing ability of Martin Luther King Jr., linked with the wisdom of Elijah Muhammad, could absolutely make the black man a powerful force for our own freedom, liberation, self-determination, and independence economically. Oh, I have become a brother in faith to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And if you study his words, you will grow as he grew to see the value of land to freedom and land to productive life for our people. The point is that right now, no land-grant college is fulfilling the aim of the Morrill Act, not one. So liberal arts education has crept in to knock out the type of education that land-grant colleges were designed to produce. I love Howard University, but when white people set up Howard, General O.O. Howard, the man after whom the college was named, was not in favor of government teaching black people the science of business, the science of warfare, and the science of mating, and that was put in the congressional record, according to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. The liberal arts colleges were set up in direct opposition to what the land-grant colleges were to teach military science, engineering, agriculture, mechanic arts, along with liberal arts. Howard University was supposed to be the theological seminary for the black clergy. That was the original idea. Can you imagine white people setting up a college to teach black people and make them clergymen? What do you think he was going to teach them to teach us? Pray for your enemy who despitefully use you. If they take your coat, give them your pants too. If they smack you on one cheek, turn to them the other also. Congregational Society of Washington had the idea of establishing a seminary, and within 2 years, that grew into a university consisting of colleges of liberal arts and medicine. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said the establishment of that university was not designed to teach black students to do for self, like the land-grant colleges under the Morrill Act wanted these colleges to do. And this brings us back to the secret relationship between blacks and Jews. Because in the South, under Booker T. Washington, in Tuskegee, what would become the bedrock of black economic independence, and that would mean the death to those who were depending on our being dependent. This excerpt is from one of the books referenced by Dr. Roshan, the former president of Tuskegee University, for us to study about the great role Tuskegee played in black advancement. The book is titled Up From History: The Life of Booker T. Washington by Robert Jefferson Norell, printed and published in 2009. Booker T. Washington was tied to members of the Jewish community, but they had not turned him. But they sought to turn the institution after him. This man writes, in 1904, Booker, I hate that he called him Booker. That's a white mentality, talking to a great man like you know him on first term, first name basis. I will not cheapen our brother by calling him Booker, even though that's the way the man wrote it. In 1904, Booker T. Washington still had to raise more than $100,000 a year to balance the budget. He searched constantly for new sources of money, and by 1904, his regular calls at the investment house of Kuhn, Loeb and Company in New York had begun to yield results. Jacob Schiff, the firm's leading partner and second only in influence to J.P. Morgan among financial capitalists in the United States, contributed to Tuskegee and later gave Booker T. Washington a substantial amount of money each year to distribute among 10 smaller industrial schools that Booker T. Washington deemed worthy. In 1904, Washington arranged the appointment of Paul Warburg of Kuhn Loeb to the Tuskegee Institute Board, the first member of the Jewish community to serve. I'm going to break into the quotes from this with these words. Paul Warburg was one of the architects of the Federal Reserve Act. Warburg and his brother Felix became significant contributors to the school, and their involvement enabled Tuskegee soon to count among its supporters bankers named Seligman, Goldman, Sachs, and Lehman. I break away a moment to say that these bankers moving in with the little bit of money that they gave to Washington because he needed it to begin to do his work, but they needed to begin to try to gradually take control of the direction of Tuskegee Institute. Look at how Paul Warburg on Jekyll Island off the coast of Georgia with the Gentiles formed the Federal Reserve Act that became law in December of 1913. And from that act in 1913, when America was a little more than $1 billion in debt, now because of the Federal Reserve, we are now $17 trillion in debt. What is the point we are making? The point is, quietly, our enemies come and make us believe they're benefiting us, only to guide us and take us away from our aim that what we do will contribute to their self-interest. I can say right now that Tuskegee is not altogether following the principles of Booker T. Washington. It has gone more towards liberal arts, more toward those courses that would make us try to fit in the framework of American society, which means that we would come out of the university only to beg white people for a job, while Booker T. Washington was interested in our coming out, creating a job, creating a business, creating employment for ourselves and our people. Now, even though science is taught, agriculture is taught, it is taught in a way, unfortunately, that we may come out and yet not be as productive as we could be. The generosity of Mr. Schiff and the Warburgs rewarded Booker T. Washington for having overcome insensitivity, if not outright anti-Semitism that he had manifested earlier. Stop. Stop. In this book, The Secret Relationship of Blacks and Jews, we list all the great men that were called by members of the Jewish community anti-Semitic. Booker T. Washington, Marcus Garvey, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, and even Nelson Mandela. So, what did Booker T. Washington see about what some members of the Jewish community were doing in the South that made him speak in a way concerning them that caused them to call him an anti-Semite? So the first thing naturally they would want to do is put money behind him. And then they said he overcame his anti-Semitism. In 1894, he had been taken to task by the editor of the American Israelite for having several times designated a man as the Jew in an article for a Christian publication. You mean to tell me you can't say that a man is a Jew? But don't you always say so-and-so is a Muslim? And then you say he's anti-Semitic or he's a radical? Black people don't have that right. Now the ADL has jumped on Kanye West because he said black people don't have the same level of connections as Jewish people. Black people don't have the same connection as oil people, quote. Did he lie? No, he told the truth. And the ADL, Mr. Foxman, issued a press release on the second day of December 2013. And this executive director said, quote, if the comments are true as reported, this is classic anti-Semitism. There it goes again. The age-old canard that Jews are all powerful. No, you're not all powerful, but you certainly are powerful. And you control the levers of government. You don't want to admit it. But as a celebrity, you're telling Kanye West he should know better. He does know better, and that's why he said what he said. Then you said to him, we hope that he would take responsibility for his words, understand why they are so offensive, and apologize to those he has offended. You know what, Mr. Foxman, I wish you and I could have a dialogue. You wouldn't put that small-time stuff over on me that you put on scared-to-death Negroes, that if they mention Jew and you call them anti-Semitic, they start bowing to you and your pressure? Kanye West, don't bow to the pressure to apologize to anybody. You said nothing wrong. Who are you, Farrakhan, to tell him that he said nothing wrong? I am directly from the Christ and the Messiah. So what I tell you has more weight than anything that these enemies might want to say. You have nothing to apologize for. It is their fear of the truth. And that's why it gives me pleasure to defend my brother. And now, Booker T. Washington was actually an admirer of Jewish entrepreneurial spirit and assimilation. Booker T. Washington never made that mistake again. Still in late 1904, he warned the Institute Business Education that too much of the school's business was being placed in the hands of a few Jewish businesses in Montgomery when, quote, in creating public sentiment in favor of the institutions, the Jews cannot be of much service. If, however, the business was to go to some Jewish merchant, Booker T. Washington wanted it given to Jacques Loeb, who in earlier hard times had extended credit to the Institute in the face of Gentile merchants, collusive threats to boycott Loeb if he helped the Tuskegans. Booker T. Washington rarely ever forgot a slight, but never a friend. Black private education in the South still depended entirely on Northern money, although it was coming to Tuskegee from some new places. In 1912, the school solicited five-year pledges, and the donors included no Carnegie, no Rockefeller, no Huntington, Peabody, Wanamaker, Ogden, or Baldwin, all of whom had been so crucial in the building of the school. About one-fifth of the money still came from Boston, chiefly from the Mason family. The influence of money slowly eroded the principles that Booker T. Washington established Tuskegee on. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad wanted to encourage Tuskegee to go back to the principles of Booker T. Washington, because those principles are sorely needed if we are going to be builders and not beggars. But what most of our people don't realize is that sometimes white people give you money, but they don't give money to further your aims. They give money to ultimately gain control and redirect their aim to that which is more beneficial to them. We see again in the Morrill Act the principle that any live germ grafted from original is devil. The Morrill Act establishes land-grant colleges. All these peasants, white folks, people that are coming in from Europe are getting land, and they are expanding America westward. The Homestead Act was enacted into law in 1862, and for 300 years, billions of dollars worth of American lands were granted to whites alone. Other huge blocks of land were sold to whites for only $1 per acre. Federal programs like the Preemption Act of 1830 and the Mineral Leasing Act of 1920 and many state programs were used to confiscate Indian land to give it to Caucasian settlers. The Homestead Act is probably the most rewarding affirmative action program American whites have ever given to themselves. Beginning in 1865, the year we were so-called set free, given the promise of 40 acres and a mule that we have never received, 250 million acres of land were given away to white families, many of whom had actually participated in the Southern Confederate Rebellion against America. Think about that. As many as 640 free acres for each white family, each acre being about the size of a football field, simply snatched from the Indians and given to whites. This is from a book titled How White Folk Got So Rich. Now in that scenario, what does America do with the blacks? You allow us to have land-grant colleges, but will you teach us agriculture? Will you teach us military science? Will you teach us engineering and other useful skills to produce real wealth? Tell me, how do you take people away from real wealth production? When you give a man land and you give him the means to work that land and the knowledge of how to farm and develop products from that land, you are giving them the means of the production of real wealth. But if you want to take real wealth from them, you have to take from them the thought of land and the love of the land. so. The enemy wanted to teach us to serve them. So they took us away from the love of the land, from the desire to own the land, from the desire to produce products from the land. It's that transgenic process all over again. The enemy creates a theology school, the way Howard started. Many of the HBCUs started as theology or Christian schools. So give the black one and keep them from getting into real wealth production. You start introducing them to liberal arts, and everything that was given into liberal arts began to destroy the very meaning of the land-grant colleges. Mr. Joel Spingarn, with whom W.E.B. Du Bois and others united to form the NAACP, injected the poison of non-economic liberalism into the black leadership. And when W.E.B. Du Bois died, he died in Africa, gaining the history of black people. And he too was labeled as an anti-Semite. If you introduce this transgenic germ into an educational system that is designed to build wealth, then that transgenic germ of liberal arts was brought in, ultimately killing off the education in agriculture, in science, in engineering, as well as military science. And now you have a bunch of so-called Negroes that have all these degrees, none of which have been useful in creating real wealth for our people. Professional brothers and sisters, your education helps you to accrue wealth for yourself, but not be a part of wealth production for our people. They excluded us out of trade unions, like the largest union, American Federation of Labor, which was run by Samuel Gompers, where they had the motto, pardon the expression, never let a nigger pick up a tool. You can find that in The Secret Relation Between Blacks and Jews, Volume 2. It's like a germ that is mental that you introduce into something that has already shown the capability of freeing you and granting you real production of wealth. Then you inject that in and ultimately begins to erode and ultimately kill the idea of Booker T. Washington and independence. That same seed that you can inject into a natural thing that would alter the genetic makeup of that thing and then make it an enemy to the natural thing is what was done to us on an educational level. And that's why today it doesn't make any difference how many degrees we have. We have not yet been productive at all for the majority of our people. But the white Christian Mennonites in the Central American nation of Belize, with an 8th grade education, have wealth and are feeding, clothing, and sheltering themselves and feeding half of the nation of Belize of non-productive black people. Any live germ grafted from original is devil. And for us to be deceived into thinking that I'm going to college, I'm going to get a degree, but in order for you to work your degree, you either have to be productive in that field to produce the very field that you're working in, or you're subjected to those who control that field. If you're a nurse, where are you going to practice nursing? If you don't produce a clinic or a hospital and the idea of producing is not in us, So our education is for the benefit of others, and if they have no place to put us, we are frustrated. Look how many college graduates are frustrated today. Look how many of us have graduated with master degrees and PhD degrees, but we are non-productive for the good of a people, but just for ourselves. Well, if you're not this or not that, you're called a neuter gender. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad called us a neuter gender. And in meaning neuter, you're neither male nor female. You are it. And that goes back to what Justice Taney was saying. We are not citizens. We are not human beings of equal stature. We are property. So these things we have to learn today. So in my conclusion, the synagogue of Satan, everyone that came to see that economic advancement was good for us was opposed. And if we mentioned you as Jewish, you say this is an anti-Semitic canard, classical anti-Semitism. Well, you're going to have to prove that, because our people soon will not be afraid to tell the truth. If the members of the Jewish community who are following the Babylonian Talmud know the value of the land, and their desire was to take us away from the land, that we would forever be dependent on those who know the value of what they're turning us away from. So you could see we have been turned away from the land, so that those who loved and know the value of land could increase their power and wealth on the land. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said the greatest brainwashing was to take us away from knowing and appreciating the value of the ownership of land. They had to fight Lincoln and the Freedmen's Bank, the Freedmen's Bureau, and the Morrill Act of 1892. Morrill, a Republican, wanted to give land to black institutions of learning to train us in agriculture, engineering, and military science, so that one day we would be able to go for ourselves. And this is why Booker T. Washington was a threat to them more so than Frederick Douglass. Although Douglass was a threat, W.E.B. Du Bois was a threat, but they were a threat in breaking down laws and customs that would forbid us from entering white society on an equal basis. But both Frederick Douglass and W.E.B. Du Bois became serious threats, particularly Du Bois, when he recognized the value of land and Africa. Booker T. Washington was a greater threat, along with Marcus Garvey, along with Elijah Muhammad, or Noble Drew Ali. Anyone who would take us back to the land would be a threat to those who did not want us to know the value of land. And so, as I conclude, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, we should be free to teach our people and then allow them the freedom to vote on whether they wish to separate. We in the Nation of Islam must be free to teach our people that kind of freedom that we must have to go for self. And you, America, should help us by affording us time to reach our people and the means to reach our people, to give them the time and what must be done and the reason for separation and then the circumstances. And then let our people have a vote as to whether they wish to to form a nation of their own. Now, what must be done by government? You have a responsibility in this. You promised us the 40 acres. You never delivered. But you said that if we had it, along with the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment, the country would be in a better state today. But we don't have it. And now the red states are definitely trying to take away any enforcement of 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to the Constitution. So if you take that away, you really want separation. Otherwise, the continued oppression will lead to bloodshed. Must it get to that point where Allah has to intervene now to kill you for killing us? For we don't have any power to kill you with the little pop guns you put in our neighborhoods to give us a little fly swatter for each other. But you would never give us what it would take to wage war with you. So Allah, God, then, will have to intervene on our behalf. You have a responsibility now because this condition is not going to get better. So will you accept the responsibility? As Presidents Thomas Jefferson and Abraham Lincoln said, will we black people accept the guidance of Booker T. Washington, the Honorable Marcus Garvey, and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, along with our liberal arts, to help us to develop and grow into independence? If you agree to do this, Almighty God, Allah will extend to you His mercy and give you an extension of time. Dear black people, a warning to you. In the Nixon administration, they came to Elijah Muhammad and they offered him a dollar for every dollar of wealth that the Nation of Islam had created under Elijah Muhammad's dynamic leadership. Some say our wealth was $40 million, some say $80 million, but the government offered to match us dollar for dollar. But guess what? The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said when he read what they offered, he told me, there were too many strings attached, so he rejected it. I'm saying this to all of you who stand with me. They will not be able to turn me, but they will be working to turn those of you who come after me. And if they offer you anything, look carefully into it, lest the nation will no longer be tied to the principles that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad desired for us to make us an independent nation on some of this earth that we can call our own. Thank you for listening. As I greet you in peace, Assalam alaikum.
On February 24th, 2013, during his Savior's Day address, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan introduced Muhammad's Economic Blueprint to End Poverty and Want.
7 days times one nickel a day, 35 cents a week. Do you have it?
Yes, sir.
Isn't that painless?
Yes, sir.
You know you don't like pain. Look at this. 52 weeks in a year, so that amounts to $18.20 per year. And if everybody in this room, everybody listening by television, everybody under the sound of my voice gave $18.20 a year, multiply that by 16 million in the working force. Now we got $291,200,000 in just 1 year. $291 million. Look at the power of pennies, nickels, and dimes. If all of us did this. Can you see the picture? Look. We want to do exactly as Isaiah the prophet said. They will rebuild the ancient ruins and restore the places long devastated. They will renew the ruined cities that have been devastated for generations.
With your support of Muhammad's economic blueprint, we can obtain farmland, build industry, and create jobs for our people. Through pooling our nickels, dimes, and dollars, we can rebuild the wasted cities and provide a future for our children. To support Muhammad's Economic Blueprint, go to economicblueprint.org and register now.
Are you in agreement with what we must do to end our poverty and want by accepting a program to put our nickels, dimes, and dollars together and make them work for us as a people? How many of you are in agreement? Would you just raise your hands?